Oh, it offends me to the soul to hear a robustious, periwig-painted fellow tear a passion to tatters, to very rags, to split the ears of the groundlings, who for the most part are capable of nothing but inexplicable dumb shows and noise.
Well, Henny, you better hang on to your bear bodkin, because you're going to hate this. It's John Malden, your host of the Inexplicable Dumb Show, starting now.
Hi, and welcome to episode 573 of the Inexplicable Dumb Show. I'm John Malden. And this week I'm joined via Skype by actor, director, producer, Jenny Paul. We're going to talk a little Looming Tower that she's done on Hulu. We're going to talk a little Netflix, Jessica Jones, and we're going to talk a little bit about her own project that she's producing. So we're going to get into that conversation just after, you guessed it, these brief messages. Would you like to be a pal of the Inexplicable Dumb Show? Why don't you head on over to www.inexplicabledumbshow.com and look for the Hosting Donations Accepted button. Press that and make a donation and help the Dumb Show cover its web hosting fees. Your donation is greatly appreciated. Thank you for your support.
Bad credit? No credit? High interest credit cards? Don't work from home. Working from home is for suckers. Go out there with headshot in hand. Audition. Book gigs. It'll be time well spent. At least you'll be paying the rent.
Here's how.
All right, ideasers. I am joined via Skype by Jenny Paul, actor, producer, director, co-founder of... You're going to have to give me the name again because I'm... Felvin?
Yeah.
Felvin Productions. All right. And we talked to you a couple years ago about a web series called That Reminds Me, correct?
Yes.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, welcome back. I'm glad you reached out because it's always fun to have people that want to talk with me. we're going to discuss today. You've got a Hulu series coming up, The Looming Tower with Jeff Daniels. And you also have a little bit on Marvel's second season of Jessica Jones, which I'm excited for. I'm excited for the first one too, but I'm a Marvel geek, as you could probably tell from our brief little thing with my Captain America shirt. And you got some stuff you're doing on your own with Cameron Douglas. So we got a lot to cover, and we got a short time to get it done. So welcome, Jenny. Thank you for reaching out and coming on the show again. So let's talk about, I guess, the Hulu series first.
Sure. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
So, The Looming Tower. Now, I've noticed because as we record this, the Olympics are going on. I guess what? Hulu is an NBC entity or something, right? They're owned by NBC. Is that how that works out?
I actually have no idea. I think Hulu is, I don't know if it's its own independent company or not. I actually don't know.
I think I got a sneaking suspicion they may be owned by NBC, but I'm not 100% sure. What I do know,
take your word for it.
The man on the street says, the man on the cyberwebs. But I have been noticing a lot of kind of commercials and plugs for The Looming Tower, and I kind of get the obviously from the short commercials and stuff that they show that it's New York 9/11 based. So kind of gets the aspect of kind of how this frame the story for us and your character and all that good stuff.
Sure. It's based on a book that was written a few years after the 9/11 attacks by Lawrence Wright called The Looming Tower. And basically the tenet of the book to some degree, and it's questionable and everybody has a bit of a different opinion about this, but that the FBI, the United States FBI and the CIA weren't fully cooperating through late 90s to a point where they may or may not have had enough information to actually prevent or see 9/11 coming. Mm. And that's what the tenet of the story is about, is basically the FBI versus the CIA, as it were. And the two men in the television show, John O'Neill and Martin Schmidt, who ran both of those departments and weren't able to fully communicate and cooperate to the point where they actually missed this major event coming. So that's what the show is about. It's a 10 episode, a limited series about basically the road to 9/11 and kind of how we missed it. So it's poised, and I've read most of the episodes. I'm in 8 of the 10. It's pretty powerful stuff. It's really, sort of a profound look at, it's just sort of how we operate as a country and as a, or operated rather, and how the system sort of can kind of stand in the way of some of the more important things, like, protection of our people, that sort of thing.
Right. And how does your character fit into this scenario?
So I play a CI agent called Maureen, and I am one of kind of a unit of characters on the show. They were called the Sisters, and basically on the CIA side of things, there was a group of women who worked for the CIA head, and in the show, his name is Martin Schmidt, who were basically in charge of interpreting and processing information data in regard to this particular case, who were kind of referred to jokingly as the Manson sisters. So they were the lemmings, as it were, of this particular department head. And that's the character that I play in the show, is I'm one of them. And in real life, I believe there were about 10 of them. They only wrote 4 into the show to sort of represent the cultishness of that group of people.
Right.
So I'm one of the 4 women that is serving, serving the CIA department head god, as it were. So it's a cool role, and it's interesting to sort of fall on antagonist end of the show, rather than protagonist being a character that has fully good intentions. It's really interesting. It was myself and Sharon Washington and Katie Flahive and Erica Cho played the 4 sisters in the show.
Cool. Now, did you guys ever get to meet any of the actual real people?
I did not. Rumor has it that some of them did. Some of the people that were, that played the more, mine was sort of a representation of a group of people.
Right.
Whereas some of the characters are actually based on real people. And my understanding is that there might have been some people that got to meet the person that they reflected. Although I can't imagine that dealing with any of that kind of stuff as the real person is easy at all.
Right.
I can't say specifically which, but I believe a few of the people aren't with us anymore.
Right. Well, because in a way, it still is, obviously resonates, and yet there is still that, now there's that space, I guess, that you can kind of look back at it at that event at a, with more of a critical eye, I suppose. And this kind of sounds like this is what this series is kind of doing, right? Just sort of delving into, okay, this is kind of what went wrong. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. I think it does. And, it's occurring in a really interesting time in our present where, there's a lot of divisiveness and need for people to sort of pick up and pull together in order to make things good.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. I mean, I think it'll be something, at the very least worth talking about and opening a conversation about, how working together as a people can serve us.
So how does this, on the nuts and bolts of this, so like Hulu and like Netflix, everything kind of gets dropped at once. So are you? You said you're in 8 episodes. Have you shot all 8, or is it in process?
We did all this last summer, and they're coming out. My understanding is they're coming out 1 a week every Wednesday night, starting February the 28th. And I'm in the pilot. I don't speak in the pilot, but I'm in 8 of the 10 And I think they, like I said, I think they come out once a week because it's Hulu rather than Netflix.
Right.
So they'll run it as a weekly through, I guess, May. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. That makes
sense. So from your recollection, what is there a scene that you filmed that, you really, really liked that we should be on the lookout for?
Yeah, there was actually my character's a little bit quirky, which I always enjoy because it's a real serious show, but there's some funny stuff within it to keep it moving. There's a scene, I think it's in episode 3, where the sisters are all kind of tired and they're sitting around the table trying to interpret some correspondence that came through, and part of it's in Arabic. And a few of them speak Arabic because they're, you know, assigned to this particular case of Osama bin Laden and what's going on there. So they sit around a conference table in a scene where they're, you know, kind of stressed out, and they're talking about, one of the girls says, you know, something to the effect of, every time I see this word, I think of Aqaba from Lawrence of Arabia. So then they have a little round table, kind of, they're pinging back and forth. Well, you know, oh, I thought that guy was really cute. Oh, this guy has blue eyes and that looks gorgeous. And then my character disagrees with them and says, no, I think he looks like Julie Andrews. I don't know if that's hot, you know? So it's a cute little like sidebar scene, but that's kind of my favorite stuff is, you know, you kind of get into the real life of the character where they're day to day and not talking about something epic. They're just kind of chatting about what they think about, you know?
Right. Which is a totally believable moment because I'm sure they had those conversations.
Oh, I'm positive. You know? You can't get 10 years without office talk like that.
All right. So give me the dates again on that. And that's on Hulu, and it's called The Looming Tower.
The Looming Tower. It's February 28th is when they're premiering it. And then once a week for 10 weeks.
Cool. And then we can hop on over to, the other side of the universe, I guess, and talk Netflix, and a little bit of Jessica Jones.
Sure. So I was talking to you before about Jessica Jones. So this one, I had a guest appearance in the premiere, and it was also a cute little, you know, goofy scene. But I know nothing about this show because they, you know, you only get scripts for the ones that you're in. Other than I saw the first season and thought it was fantastic.
Right.
So I'm really excited that not only am I in the show, but I'm in the premiere of the second season, which I think will be the one that people are real excited to watch.
Yeah. No, I watched the first series. I really liked it. I like how Marvel blends the series together. So she's in, you know, to get a little Luke Cage bleed over.
Yeah.
And then you get the entire, you know, the Defenders series, which I thought was very short and I liked, but it was a little short for me. Could have been more episodes.
Right.
I guess my only critique is Iron Fist. I'm not a big Iron Fist fan, if I'm honest.
I haven't seen that one. I started trying to catch up once I did the show and I went, oh, I got to watch this stuff now.
Yeah. No, I mean, and it's, of course, everything is you know, beautifully done and everything, but just kind of the character vibe of Iron Fist, I don't like. He's a little whiny for me to be a superhero, but, you know, that's just my taste. But, but in Jessica Jones, I'm watching the first series and everybody she seemed to come in contact with somehow ended up dead.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you know, and I'm sitting there going, man, I think you're cool, but there's no way I would ever want to be your friend.
No, I think your friend would probably be the wise choice in real life. So that would be my gut feeling on the subject.
So you're in the pilot, and you said you know, you obviously you got your kind of scene and stuff. When you audition for that kind of thing, do they do the Walking Dead thing where they send you a generic scene that's not even related to what you're going to be shooting and go?
Oh no, I got the scene. So my character ended up having, being a bride, in the scenario. But I actually got a scene that scene very similar, if not the exact same thing. The breakdown for the scene said fangirl. So I got real excited because that's super fun. And I remember I went in for the role, and I had been in that casting office once or twice before, and it had gone well, but I had never done a Marvel show. And my understanding is you can only do one Marvel show because it's the Marvel universe. They don't like to have right. characters show up a couple more, you know, more times. So I had been in for a couple other of the shows in the seasons before. And I came in, and I came in with my, I have an Avengers sweatshirt that I got when I did the half marathon at Disney in Anaheim with my brother. And so I came in dressed as a fangirl. I came in, with my Avengers sweatshirt and some, you know, cute earrings that were sort of, you know, goofy looking, like super cute and, you know, in a ponytail. And I kind of came full fangirl because I thought, you know, what the heck?
Yeah, right.
And so I ended up getting it, and they ended up actually changing the role to not really be a fangirl, but it was still a lot of fun because it was just, I don't know, you know, when you can kind of do something like that, and it makes it a little, I don't know, more fun. You know, we, as actors, we go audition, if we're lucky, a few times a week for different shows and things. And, you know, you go and you sit there for a few minutes, and you go in and you do your job, and you read the script and you leave.
Right.
So it's not anything, you know, super special or even stressful. You just, you know, you go, and if you're the right person for the role, then you get a phone call.
Right.
And so it was fun because I got to kind of have a little fun with that one.
Well, cool. And how long is the out there? How long is the turnaround from between audition and notification? Because sometimes you hear people say, like, I auditioned, and then 7 months later, I got a call.
Right. Well, interestingly, I think I auditioned for Jessica Jones in, oh gosh, I think it would have been in 2016, late 2016. I found out right away. They called me 3 days later, and they put me on hold, which for an actor speak usually means that it's down to you and maybe one or two other people.
Right.
And you don't know whether you're the, you know, whether you're the big hold or the small hold, as it were.
Right.
So you just kind of hope. So I found out that I was going to be on hold for it very fast. And then I think they turned it around pretty fast. I think I knew within the week. And then they scheduled me for February of 2017. I think that's the timeline. It was a long time ago for the shoot. And then the other one, the Looming Tower, I was on hold, I think, for a long time for that show, to the point where I thought I wasn't the big hold.
Right.
You know, I went, okay, well, you know, they, you know, maybe they forgot, or, you know, I wasn't sure, but apparently they held me for a very long time because they were building the whole cast before they made any offers.
Ah.
So I had been on hold. I think I was on hold for that for maybe more than a month. And I had called my manager and said, you know, can I take this off my calendar? And she said, well, let me just call to make sure. And then she called the casting office, and they went, no, 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 no. No, no, no. Keep her on hold. Keep her on hold. She's on the short list. And my agent called me back, and she says, well, I guess you can't take it off your calendar.
Well, so there you go.
So, yeah, you know, for, it depends on the show. But, yeah, I think for Jessica Jones, I knew very fast. They're very, you know, the show is already cast, so they were casting the guest roles. So I guess right. they were able to make those decisions pretty quickly.
Right. And the scope of production, I mean, because I would say probably, obviously, within the last, what, maybe 4 or 5 years, Netflix and Hulu have become predominant in filmmaking industry, correct?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
How fast have you noticed the change in your own career of that kind of stuff? Like, since specifically you do production stuff, how fast has that kind of streaming service exploded for you?
Oh, I mean, pretty fast. I mean, I've been in the business. I graduated college about 11 years ago, I would say. So I've been an actor here ever since. And that was a thing. That was something you would have never heard about when I moved here in New York. I think just in the last couple of years, they've not only become common, but they've become equal footing with the networks.
Right.
So it, you know, as far as how I treat something, I treat it exactly the same because it's exactly the same, you know, then it's other than they tend to have different, you know, networks sort of tend to do shooting schedules on a cycle system where they will have, you know, they'll shoot something, maybe say like Law and Order, they'll shoot it and then it'll be ready a month later. And then they're already shooting the next one to be ready a month later. And they're kind of on a regimented schedule in that way. Mm-hmm. The ones that are more Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, these types of things, they sometimes have different types of schedules where they'll shoot everything at once, or shoot it in blocks, or they'll have everything ready before they even air the first episode.
Uh-huh.
But as far as in acting is concerned, they're equal footing to the network opportunities. Usually for the one of these, the difference is it takes a lot longer for the show to come out sometimes. So I did film Jessica Jones last February.
Mm.
So that's how long it took for, you know, the show's coming out on March 8th. So it was a long time ago that I did the work for that show.
Right.
Whereas if it was network, I would have done it, you know, if I had booked something, I would have done it in, you know, say September, and then the show would be airing mid-October.
Right. Cool. So let's then cycle in into what you're doing and producing and directing with Cameron Douglas. So what do you got going on there?
So in my spare time, which these days there's a lot less of, which is a good thing.
Right.
I do a lot of producing, occasionally directing, but mostly producing. And so the recent project that's actually finishing right now is, so Michael Douglas's oldest son, Cameron, is basically premiering in this film. So we shot it. It's called Dead Layer. We shot it in December. It's meant to be kind of a teaser. It's a short that was meant to be designed to get to raise money for a feature film that is now starting to happen now. So it's a 10-minute short about a graffiti artist, a reformed graffiti artist who it's kind of implied that he was either in rehab or, you know, in some sort of program to get him clean. And he meets up with an old buddy, and the old buddy sort of drags him back into the kind of the underworld that he was trying to get away from. Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting story, and it's really exciting to be able to see Cameron work, and, you know, from perspective of being a long time admirer of his family's work, that he has a lot of similar qualities to his father and his grandfather. And a very interesting person to watch on screen. So it's been an interesting and fun to be able to support what we hope will be a really fantastic artist's first big, you know, big thing.
Right. So as producer, because the tagging world, it does exist and it does have a culture. So how much did you go into the looking at that? I mean, in research and that kind of thing.
Well, we actually did a lot of that. So, you know, one of the major areas in New York City that has, you know, as you say, tagging culture and just graffiti art as a concept is, you know, Williamsburg and Bushwick.
Uh-huh.
So we're here kind of at the scene of the crime, as it were.
Right.
So we actually filmed the film in two actually pretty famous locations for the graffiti art. And because they are, you know, that they're kind of, I won't say what they are because they're kind of underground famous, but we were really able to sort of talk to the community there because they were excited to have us and to have something representing their community. So most of these guys aren't, you know, most of them aren't really just taggers. Most of them are artists that just happen to be, happens to be their form of expression, which is, you know, in some cases legal and in some cases not legal. So it's a little interesting. We actually consulted with somebody who I don't even know his real name. He has an artist tag, and he came to lunch, and we took him to lunch to go over the script and make sure that the language and the world felt and seemed like it was supposed to. And he had a lot to say about things that needed to change. And so we, you know, of course, changed them because we wanted to be as authentic to that world as we can. And so, yeah, we have a, you know, really interesting, you know, it's a whole different world. They, you know, a lot of those guys don't even know each other's real names. Uh-huh. They have tags like in the show. Danny is the character that Cameron plays, and his name is Sharp Eyes. His tag is Sharp Eyes, and they call him Sharp. And then another character who's a lead character, his real name is James. And we do know that because we meet them outside of that world. And Then they go to that world. They call him Sizz, and his tag is Scissor, S-I-Z-E-R. So yeah, it's very interesting. And for me, I hate to admit, I'm kind of as squeaky clean as they come. Like I never even thought about being in any of these worlds, but it's really fascinating. And these people are just really, really interesting and talented. And, you know, it's just a group of people that, you know, found a niche together in that world rather than, you know, than any sort of overarching story of, you know, trouble or crime or anything else that's associated with it. They found the people that they like and they hang out with them.
Yeah, and they found their family.
Exactly.
But one of those guys in real life just got like a settlement for several million dollars, right? Because the city tore down.
I believe that is true.
His or her artwork or something. I just saw it the other day. But
this week, I think that happened. Yeah. I mean, you know, in New York City, it depends on who commissions what and where. You know, you see just as much tagging and illegal graffiti as you do legal graffiti that's murals.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of times, you know, you walk down the street in the city and there's a huge, beautiful mural painted in spray paint that wasn't ever illegal to begin with. That maybe the owner of the building commissioned it, or maybe, you know, maybe somebody painted it and then they left it because it was really cool. Mm. Or, and then sort of in the wake of Banksy being the sort of, let me spray paint something and run away. But the somethings are very cool. Mm. So people sometimes just, they decide to keep it. There's one on a Banksy on 79th Street in Broadway that was painted illegally. And the owner of the property there actually put a plastic cover, screwed a plastic cover in over it so that nobody could come in and tag over it because it's cool. They want it there.
Right.
So, you know, not all Banksy's got protected in that way. In fact, I think there are very few left that haven't, I think there was some stories about some warring, graffiti artist that came and destroyed almost everything he came through and did. But, that they have that in a lot of places. I was at Sundance Film Festival this year, and on the main street in Park City, Utah, they had a Banksy, same thing. They had it protected because it's a piece of art.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. So how can we come in and see what you've got going on with this story?
So this one, if it's on track to do what it should do, we're hoping it'll make one of the major festivals, maybe Cannes this year, maybe Sundance, although Sundance doesn't happen for another year. So we may try to do a couple of the bigger festivals that are sooner than that, because this particular project may move to feature pretty quickly because of Cameron and his clout, but also just because it's a very cool story and a well-written screenplay. So hopefully in the next year, at the very least, it'll be festivals. And then what we're hoping is the following year we'll be shooting the feature, and then that'll have, you know, its release of some sort.
Outstanding. And if people wanted to learn more about you, where can we go?
I, like all good producers and most actors, have a website. It's jennypaul.info. Easy spelling, jennypaul.info. I think .com was taken by a nice couple named Jenny and Paul in their wedding like 10 years ago.
That's perfect.
And then IMDb is always the place to go to find information about different films and things. So I'm there as well. My name also, Jenny Paul.
Oh, outstanding. Outstanding. Well, of course, I'll have a link to that on the show notes page for this particular episode at www.inexplicabledumbshow.com. Well, thanks for chatting with me, Jenny.
Thank you for having me, and it's nice to talk to you again.
When guests can't appear in studio, they are interviewed over Skype. Skype is a great piece of software that turns your computer into a phone. Talk computer to computer or to any phone or cell phone in the world through the Skype Out program. Interested? Download Skype via inexplicabledumbshow.com. Just look for the Download Skype button. Go ahead. Join in the fun.
If you love the Inexplicable Dumb Show as much as I do, don't be shy about it. Go ahead and wear your feelings on your sleeve, or at least your chest. Head on over to our Cafe Press store and wear your support for the IDS proudly. www.cafepress.com/dumbshow.
So that is it. I'd like to thank actor, director, producer Jenny Paul for stopping by today via Skype and for reaching out and saying, hey, I got things I want to talk about. And so we talked about them. Again, information that about links and show notes page, all that stuff will be on the show notes page for this particular episode, www.inexplicabledumbshow.com. Hey, do you want to be on the Dumb Show, be part of the Dumb Show? Then do like Jenny did and reach out. Call the voicemail at 615-866-1282. Or put your thoughts in an email, podcast@inexplicabledumbshow.com. Or follow the show on Twitter, @inexplicableDS, @ inexplicable, D, S. Find out the latest comings and goings and whatnot for the show via our Twitter feed. So next week, who knows what we'll be into, but I'm sure it'll be something good. So until next week, this is John Malden saying, hey, I'll see ya. Bye.
Are you a music lover? Then let Magnatune dazzle you with how different we are from the rest of the music industry. Interesting independent artists in diverse genres. Perfect quality wave files in addition to MP3s and many other formats. Instant album downloads or traditional CDs by mail with free shipping. All this and half of every sale goes directly to the artist. So visit us now at magnatune.com. That's M-A-G-N-A-T-U-N-E. Magnitude. We are not evil.
This podcast is a member of the Blueberry Network. Blueberry. No E's. That's Blueberry, BLUBRRY.com. Blueberry.com.
Pop Alternative Media.